This is an interview with Mr. John Zamory for the Youngstown State University Youngstown Fire Department project by Mike Carrillo at the main fire station downtown Youngstown on September 25th at approximately 3:45 p.m. Mr. Zamory, could you provide some information on your family background and schooling?
Okay, I attended all schools in Youngstown, graduated from Ursuline High School, and went to the service in 1950, graduated from Ursuline High School in 51, went to the service in 1954, returned home in 1956, and married, I'm the father of four children, was appointed to the Youngstown Fire Department in 1959, and at that time I began attending Youngstown University on a part-time basis, and I finally graduated in December of 73 with a bachelor's in business administration and a major in public accounting.
Okay. What occupations were you employed in before coming to fire?
From the time that I left high school until I entered service, and then after service I was with the General Fireproofing Company, and I worked in the desk assembly division. That's approximately from 1952 to 59.
Now, why did you become a fireman when you did?
At the time of taking examination for a fireman, the work situation in Youngstown, we were experiencing an economic decline. And at that time I was laid off from General Fireproofing, and the vacancy occurred here on the department, and I took it.
Mm-hmm. What do you remember about the first years on the department?
Okay, my first few years on the department were spent... When I was first appointed to the department, I was assigned initially to the then number 11 fire station that since has been closed. And this station was on Pullen Avenue. And I worked there and other stations in the south side until about the middle of 1960. And we, in 1960, we acquired the ambulance. And I believe it was in January of 1961 I was assigned to this station downtown to ride the ambulance. And just repeat here for a moment. Then. I worked various Southside stations, and then we acquired the ambulance. And one day in January of 61, when I was assigned down here to ride the ambulance, we were involved in a serious accident with it and demolished the ambulance, and just sort of changed the whole tone of my future on the department, and that was responsible for me arriving here in the alarm office. After the accident, I returned to work. I'm back to working fire trucks for a while, but the nature of the injury was such that I eventually had to come in here, and I've been here I believe it was 1971 when I took over on the death of then Chief Alarm Operator Frank Kavanaugh.
Now, what are the duties and responsibilities of the Chief Alarm Operator?
Okay. Basically, it's record keeping. As with every endeavor, we have people here who go out and put the fire out, but someone has to maintain records of them. And the duty of the Chief Alarm Operator is to see that these records are kept, to prepare the monthly and annual summaries of the activities of the fire department with respect to training and firefighting. In addition to that, I'm responsible for the operation of this room and everything in it. That includes, preparing contracts for radio service. I'm also responsible for the radio equipment, new replacement, repair, and so on. And another duty, which is almost continuing, as kind of large in scope, and that is to redefine fire districts. If we move a fire station, close a fire station, some new obstacle occurs in the city, as we're going to have next year. They're going to close the Market Street Bridge. This will necessitate changing some of the fire responses from what they are today. The opening of the freeway, which is about a month off, is another area where we'll take a hard look at what we're using in the southeast section of the city, and maybe we'll perhaps move some different companies in that can utilize the freeway, or we'll move them back into the downtown area.
How does one become chief alarm operator? Is it a test? Do you have to achieve a certain rank before one can become one, or what are the qualifications?
Yeah, it, as with most of the jobs on the fire department, a test is given, and since it's only, there is only one of this classification, it's rather infrequent that the vacancy occurs. And as I mentioned earlier, the way I became chief alarm operator was through the death of the previous alarm operator. Prior to that time, I think he had held the job for approximately 15 years. It is promotional. It's one step above firefighter. Responsibilities are somewhat higher. Many years ago, the position of chief alarm operator was, and still is, in the organization department considered to be at a chief's rank, but they have changed the pay on it.
Can you describe the physical makeup of the alarm room and the type of equipment the dispatcher uses?
Okay, primarily, probably first in the order of importance, is the PBX switchboard where we are sitting. All of the telephone calls incoming to the fire department come through this switchboard. And as you can see, there are a number of other plugs, as they're referred to. The stations, the various extension lines, anything that interstation or from the outside into the fire department runs through this board. In addition to the fire stations and our normal office extensions, we have direct lines to the hospitals. The police department radio dispatcher, several of the industrial plants here in the area, and approximately half dozen of the ambulance services. Now, the reason for all these extensions is that I'll finish this comment. It's important that we have rapid communication with the ambulance services and several of these industrial plants. Okay, next in line we have referred to here as a console. It has on it dictaphone recorder, which we use to record emergency calls. This is provided primarily for our benefit to be sure that we get the address correctly. The playback capability allows us to check it while the fire trucks are en route. Along the top, we have three remote receivers for our radio transmitters. And the reason there are three is that over a period of years, we found that we had some dead spots. It required three different transmitter sites in the city to get the kind of coverage we felt that we needed. One of the transmitters is located in this room back in the corner. One is on the north side of the water tower, and the other one is out at where we were the other evening, on the east side of McGuffey and Colby at the water tower. Everything comes into this room from those transmitter sites on a telephone cable and then goes out on the air. Just below is the mechanism we have for implementing the fire alarm system to the stations. The red button activates the bell. This is known as a game well system. It's pretty common throughout fire departments in the country. It is an automatic with the red button, or we have your manual tripping switch.
55 white service.
Okay, 55. This paper tape recorder here records incoming street boxes that are pulled, and as a matter of fact, any activity on the Gainwell fire alarm system will be recorded on this recorder. It's a master tape. covered the red button. That's the one we used to alert all the stations in the city at one time when we wanted to dispatch for a fire. Immediately next to it, we have a radio paging system. This is a supplemental system, which we use primarily at night. It allows us the opportunity to dispatch individual stations or groups of stations without alerting all the stations in the city. And the way we do that is by putting a number code on the console here and just pressing the button. The radio signal turns on the fire alarm system in the station, turns on the lights in the station, and turns on their speaker system. And then we talk to them either over the one I refer to as Gamewell or over radio, out through the air or over the wire, either way, once we've turned the system on. On the other side of the room, we have on the top the recording and alarm system of the American District Telegraph. It's a local company, or a national company, which provides local protection to industrial plants. If they receive a signal in their central office, it indicates a need for the fire department, and that would be a smoke signal, a smoke sensing signal, or one of their automatic sprinkler system signals. They'll relay one in here. They use a number code. We have a file on, and we can dispatch. We also have a direct line to them. Generally, their telephone call accompanies their automatic signal, because frequently those signals are false. The other recorders are supplemental to the main recorder we have here on the console. We have it broken down so that street boxes, fire department station signals, and are separated into three different banks there. What it amounts to is a backup system. If one works or fails to work, the others are available. This console system right here handles all of the... This cabinet, the gray cabinet, the Gamewell console, has a number of keys on it. The left bank primarily handles all of the fireboxes in the city. I'll qualify that. Those are individual circuits, and there are from 2 to 10 fireboxes on each one of those circuits. After you've been here for a while, you've become accustomed to it. You can just about tell what section of the city the firebox is being pulled. The next two on the right bank are called tie lines, and tie line one controls the fireboxes on the east side, and tie line two controls fireboxes on the south side. Basically, what we did there was we just saved some wire. We have a cabinet like this on the east side fire station and one on the south side. And all of these signals come into these two locations, and then they travel down here over two wires. Just over here. The remaining keys on that console have to do with the voice communications and the fire alarm signal into the fire stations. Next to that, we have a file which includes all of the streets in the city alphabetically with the fire response already on them. If you call in, give us your street address, your house number, all we do is look for it alphabetically. It tells the operator on duty which fire companies to dispatch. In addition to that, we have a numerical file for all of the fireboxes. I've just referred to all the street boxes again. Predetermined who goes. The schools are covered, the hospitals, nursing homes. Generally, we have some what we call fire clause contracts. It's a few businesses outside the city, a few areas outside the city, specifically a couple areas in Liberty Township around Northside Hospital are the responsibility of our department. Several county buildings, the tuberculosis sanitarium, two or three buildings on Kirk Road, we take care of those. And that covers the portions of the room that deal with the fire department. Additionally, we have on the wall over there a little telephone device, which right here, 1234. And that rings the countywide siren system that you hear every Saturday at 6 p.m. They've recently had some changes in the makeup of that organization. They're referring now to as the Mahoney County Disaster Agency or something of that nature. And in the event of severe weather, they'll probably be using the siren to alert people, tornadoes and things like that. If we've transferred from the philosophy of purely civil defense to natural disaster, and they're working on it now. I think I've fairly well covered the equipment.
How long would it take you to track down, you get an incoming signal through from one of the boxes in the city? How long would you be able to pinpoint?
Well, the boxes come in, the impulses are approximately 1 second each, and I could have a truck in motion in less than 30 seconds. It's possible, and perhaps while we're talking here, one will come in, as you saw earlier.
Right.
less than a minute, because you can count them, but it's a good idea with these boxes to wait until they ring the second time. They'll when someone pulls a box on the street, it'll ring four times. Okay, so you get four number series. The first one may be off sequence, and you may not be getting it correctly, so you wait till the second one. And they should be on the road in less than a minute from the time it starts in here. Now, those are almost all telephone dispatches. If the box is in the downtown area, it would start with a one rather than some other number. We might send three or four trucks on that. Schools start with seven. We generally make a full response on those, with one or two exceptions that are known false.
What do you do as a dispatcher if, say, an outlying area needs assistance? Can the Youngstown Fire Department answer, example, assistance to Borman Township or Austintown or Liberty or one of the volunteer departments?
We can. We have an agreement which they refer to as chief to chief. And to define it very simply, the chief of one department requests generally to speak to our chief, and we dispatch. But what happened, we've had several instances just recently. Struthers had occasion to call us, and the chief is busy fighting, so there really isn't any hesitation. All we do is verify that it's legitimate, and then we send it. The occasions when some other fire department requires our assistance are rather few. In my memory, we've gone to Struthers two or three times, Austintown on one or two occasions. We have some contract work in Austintown with industrial plants. Even these are becoming fewer. So it isn't. It's a rather rare occurrence.
You have alarm systems changed greatly over the years, and do most cities with fire companies throughout the nation have the similar setup we have here?
First of all, yes, they have changed, and number two, yes, they do have similar setups. However, the changes occurred in this fashion. There is no longer a real dependence on the street box as there once was. I'll back up a little bit and cover that. Originally, in this, not this room, but where we were previously, we had what was called a repeater. A firebox would be pulled and it would ring here in the central office. And the operator or dispatcher on duty would repeat this alarm to the stations. Each station had their own book. They responded without any actual contact from central office. We didn't even use the phone to check them. I'm talking about a long time ago, 25 or perhaps longer years. But with the increasing number of telephones, we find now that here and in other cities, the firebox arrangement that we have is used, but not to the extent that it was before. Generally, if you have a fire, you'll get a street box, but it will be accompanied by a telephone call, except in the wee hours of the morning. And now that the change is to a a telephone company provided box in place of the one where you just pull a lever. You'll actually have a telephone there. You can pick it up and have voice contact with the dispatcher. I think Camel has this now, but I'm not sure. And we're thinking about it, particularly on a freeway system, and I think all high evaluation areas where people might not be in the downtown area at night, there should be phone service or street boxes. We have none.
If you take us through a dry run of an alarm, say, set up on Wick Heights, Wick Avenue there by the university, and what would happen from me pulling the alarm on the pole until the truck or an individual station being unloaded?
Okay, if you were to pull an alarm in the university area, the recorder in front of you would indicate that a box is coming in, this little bell that you heard before. This is just a street box with no telephone call. Okay, from the number, I'd look it up, and it would tell me that it would be Wick and Bryson, or an area that I know is university. That would not be a one-truck response. If we get an alarm in the university area, we send 3 to 4 units in a ladder truck. So to go over it again, as soon as I was assured that the number was correct, I would turn around here and check the file. The file would tell me it was the university area and which trucks to send. I'd turn back to the console here, push that red button on your left. And this turns on the alarm system and all the
stations. It breaks about an hour and a half of place in front. Okay.
That would activate the alarm system in the stations and we dispatch. We're talking about a time span, again, of less than a minute. Now, when they arrive there, as soon as they leave the station, I should have covered that earlier, we ring the telephone in their station. Just put a cord into their extension, ring it. And they don't answer the phone, I know they've gone. We make a radio contact with them, find out that we know they've left the station, now we find out that they definitely are going to the right place. And when they arrive, they inform us, as you heard with the ambulance. Basically, that's how it goes.
Mm-hmm. How prevalent and how much of a nuisance are false alarms?
How prevalent, it's 99 in 3 or 4 decimal places. And a nuisance, we don't mind so much as there is a tendency to relax your guard, and that's really the real hazard of it, other than the traffic hazards involved and the almost certain knowledge that you are responding to a false alarm. They're really not that much trouble to us, but throughout the country, you hesitate to remove them, and we have removed some of the more troublesome ones. Just on the outside chance that if they're available once, they've served their purpose. So we keep them in much longer than we should. And occasionally we move them across the street or under a street light. We do keep them. It's very, with false alarms, it's difficult to prosecute. Most of the time they're children. And the court is lenient. I'm not even sure what the fine is. We catch them occasionally.
You were a fireman before becoming chief alarm operator.
Right.
What goes through a fireman's mind when the alarm goes off?
Well, it has a tendency to excite you. I don't know if this is a conditioned response that you acquire from other members of the department when you come on, but my own recollection is, that my observations here is that it does excite you. It's the unknown, the unexpected. In addition to sounding that alarm, working in here, we have to work at not adding to that excitement. I've been here for a while, and people judge my voice tone. On some occasions, I get excited. I try not to. But when I do, those who know me are aware that they're in for something. I think that answers your question indirectly, but the bell itself, have you ever heard it?
Yes.
It has a tendency to excite you. And this is why we went to the radio paging system. I can show you what that tone sounds like. exactly what they hear as opposed to the bell, but it's not as severe. I think the circuits that open up in association with the bell are excite you just as much. You know, the lights come on and there's just a little crackle of electricity associated with the mechanism working. It all tends to excite you. One of the bad things about it, you know you're going to a fire. You could be exposed to some hazard. This does excite you too much.
I was going to say, talking to firemen previously, they said that, well, it all depends on the individual. Some never get over that anxiety of when the bell hits. And I was thinking, could not this alternative system they use at night be adopted full-time, or another system, alarm system, to alert the firemen instead of the rigid sound of the bell?
This is a little better. We could adapt it by just one more row of keys to get a group response. That's the reason we don't use it in the daytime. This is a little faster. The bell is a little faster. It's one button. And you get the attention of all the stations at one time. There are two schools of thought on that. One is that everyone should know there's a fire in progress, and the other is only those who are going should be excited to the point that we normally do. But I think we should get away from it, unless we can change the attitude of the fellows coming on now. If they're conditioned by the older members to get extremely excited, then we're going to have a continuing problem. Mm-hmm. But I think it's general. It's almost like a little pep, gets you going, gets the adrenaline moving.
Can you describe a typical day on duty of alarm operator Zamory?
Okay. Okay, the question was a typical day for me as opposed to one of the regular men. If I'm on day turn, it becomes, on day turn, that is working just 8 hours a day, every day, 5 days a week, then it becomes somewhat of routine. The first thing I do in the morning would be to take care of any repairs that need to be made, such as radios and so on. Pick up the fire reports from the previous day. I record all these in the book and I file them. When I work in the position I'm in today, filling in on a vacation period and still doing the duties that I have as a chief alarm operator, then it becomes a little more hectic, as you've seen. People come in with questions because I haven't been here for every day as I would be normally. I'm here 24-hour shift. And I have to sandwich in what I normally would do. That is the filing, the recording, the insurance reports that are just about routine every day, any requests for repairs, any number of little items that come up here. Hydrants out of service, fire trucks out of service, and so on. Then I sandwich them in with this time here at the board, and it just becomes a little more hectic than it would otherwise. I don't know what else I could add to it.
Is there a daily log kept of that day's activity?
Yeah, the men on duty, when I'm not here, they just maintain a daily log in a typewriter. And it's it includes fire responses, ambulance responses, anything out of the ordinary that occurs. And I take all the fire activity and I record that in a permanent ledger and file these things away so that We have a regular filing system that we follow that makes it easy for someone to locate them. And then when I have the time, I daily accumulate the statistics that I put together each month. If I don't do them one day, I have to do them the next day. Basically, most of the year now, because of somewhat of a shortage of manpower, I find myself on the 24-hour shift. And, it's almost hard to remember what the five-day routine is. I am rarely here on a five-day basis. It's usually a 24-hour shift in and off like the regular.
How active is the ambulance service associated with the fire department?
Okay, in terms of numbers, it is running more responses than the rest of the fire department by number. As of this morning, Okay, this is the end of September. We've had 2,235 fire alarms for the year. That's of all types now, false alarm, grass fires, and so on. And the ambulances run 2,766, roughly 500 more responses than the department. Those are not really two good numbers to try to compare, because three, four, five fire trucks respond to some fire calls, and in many cases just one. But to try to put it on balance, we do devote, as far as the alarm room is concerned, the ambulance is more a problem, you might say, than the firework right now. These people generally are more excited. You get more calls for accidents and things of that nature. It may happen while you're here. This board frequently lights up in response to an accident, and only rarely does that occur with a fire. Most of the time somebody thinks everyone else called the fire department, but everyone seems to want to call for the ambulance.
What other types of emergencies do you dispatch trucks to other than firefighting?
I mentioned, no, I didn't either. The one that we frequently get anymore is on the freeway system. We're required to send out our rescue squad. People get caught in a wreck, and we have equipment on there to burn them out, cut them out, and so on. That's one type of emergency. Children will get themselves into all sorts of circumstances with bars and railings and things of that nature. You wouldn't call this an emergency, but we do get a lot of calls for people locked out. It's a problem to them at the moment, but we refer to them in a broad general sense as emergencies, but just a matter of going out, letting them into their home, finding a window open, forcing a door or something. Any number of wires down, it's hard to think just rapidly what would happen. Electrical storms, automobile accidents, flushing streets, after auto accidents, get oil, water, gasoline on. That, I would think, pretty much covers the type of response other than fires. Flushing streets, letting people in their homes, responding to auto accidents. Of course, there are a lot of fires associated with auto accidents, too.
What type of training did you receive becoming a fireman?
Here?
Yes.
Oh, for firefighting? Or?
Yes.
Okay. At the time I came on, we had, we were assigned immediately to a station. And it wasn't a formal type of training that they have now. They go into, I think they're in a 160-hour program, but when I came on, we didn't have this. We had a training chief who visited the stations, as we do now. But primarily, it was more on the job at that time. That was in the 1959. The emphasis was, at that time, go out and do the actual firefighting work and learn. And some training was provided by your captain in the station, and some through the training chief on his visits. But it was more on the job.
And what kind of type of training does a dispatcher receive now?
All right, here now, when I get someone new, excuse me, well, we're fortunate in that the telephone company will provide us with a couple days of training to familiarize someone new with the switchboard. It's not difficult, but it's you have to acquire a knowledge of it, a basic understanding of how it functions, and then just gain confidence. And this is what they do for us. So when I get someone new in here, we usually send them off to the telephone company. Then if I'm here working a day turn schedule, I spend some time with them, or we get them to observe another operator working for a while. We allow him, once he's confident that he can handle the board, to answer the call. And the only problem here is that when you're new, you're tense, and if you get that excited caller that says, "My house is on fire," and hangs up, then you need someone with a little bit of experience to try to hold that person on the line. And we can't always do it. But we do stay with them a couple weeks, 3 weeks, depending on how the individual develops. There is a fear of this job because you're dealing with them. People in extremely acute situations, you know, they're highly excited when they do call you. And sometimes we listen calmly, sometimes we shout back. You can't determine in advance what you're going to do, it's just sort of a feel of the situation. And that's probably the hardest thing for someone new to pick up, to just wait them out. The most important thing to find out is where are you and what's wrong. And most of the time, they'll tell you everything about that. that's the hard part.
What injuries have you incurred
just in firefighting itself? Nothing more than a few minor burns, which you'll encounter in the normal course of work. In firefighting, in the actual course of firefighting, the only thing I've experienced are minor burns. The accident that occurred that eventually put me here was when I was out working as an attendant on the ambulance, as I mentioned earlier. And that included some back injury, neck injury, concussion, which probably will yet result in some surgery. It's a different type of work that you're involved in, and an auto accident is an auto accident, whether you're on your job or not. What was so severe about this one is that you are not seated. And, it was more violent because there were a large number of vehicles involved. Generally, the injuries of firefighters would be limited to burns, falling, breaking legs, and so on.
And how much risk do you believe is involved in firefighting?
Risk? Today, the risk is an unknown factor. That is, there are several reasons for that. One is we have these new materials that are using. One that specifically is going to be a lot of trouble is the one we're using for clothing now, plumbing, and that's polyvinyl chloride. We use this for plastic pipes and for simulated leather jackets. When this substance burns, it's sending off fumes that are classified or are phosgene type gases, which are kind of deadly. That's one of the hazards, is the new exotic materials that are using. The synthetics that are being used in furniture and clothing, that's a big hazard. The other is arson's on the increase, as you probably have heard. And you really don't know what you're going to be running into when you go into a building that has been set afire by an arson. Aside a normal fire, you can just about calculate the hazards that you'll encounter. Today, everything has changed. You go up to a building, if it has been vacant, there's a good possibility that it was set afire. If it's occupied, there's a good possibility you're gonna require a mask to protect you from the synthetic fabrics and so on. The nature of the job is that it's changing, and it's gonna require more of an education, I think, than the sheer nerve and the old image that we had of the firefighter. We don't attempt to eat smoke anymore because the smoke will kill you. It just used to make you uncomfortable, now it'll kill you.
What changes in the fire department have you observed during your years in service?
Changes. Some of the changes that through personal experience and traveling and attending a few schools, there is rapidly developing a more scientific approach to firefighting. I just mentioned earlier that smoke made you ill. We never thought too much of that before, used to be you would run in, get excited, and go in and do what the non-firefighters call the water squirter. Just go in and put a fire out with water. And the changes are occurring, or that we're approaching them, go through our equipment. Okay, we've changed our equipment so that we can provide limited but adequate supplies of water immediately on a fire scene. And the way we've done this is we've increased the size of the water tanks on the truck. The men entering the burning building are putting on what we use here in the Youngstown department, this Cod Air Pack. What it is a self-contained breathing apparatus. It's not oxygen, but it's air, purified air. So with the combination of these two, you go in with a limited but adequate supply of water, and you go in protected so that you can reach the seat of the fire, and you put it out with less water damage. The man is protected, so there's no physical damage to him, and we're doing a more professional job. Changes in equipment, we're in the department, we're going to diesel operation. Here you have more powerful equipment for the same size power plant. Our big problem is to get there rapidly as possible, and have, if necessary, if we're in a pumping situation, trouble-free operation. We're getting this with diesel.
Do you believe in the salary and the benefits of firemen have improved satisfactorily with other occupations?
Not with other occupations, but just in my time on the department, we've increased the salary schedule. The fringe benefits now are, particularly with firefighters, we're members of the AFL-CIO, so we pattern our bargaining pretty much along the line of industry. We have a reasonably good insurance program. We have as good a hospitalization program as most of the in industries in this area. We're lacking in dental and eye service that some of them are providing, but when we compare firefighter salary schedules in Youngstown with those in larger cities, then we are behind. That's in two areas, both in pay and in hours. Some of the larger cities are on a shorter work week, a different work schedule. And there's as much as a $5,000 spread between what a first-class firefighter in Youngstown makes and one in L.A. And both fires, both men respond to similar fires every day. But we're working toward a higher schedule. And with the problems of the cities as they are, I don't know how we're going to increase as rapidly as we might like. Some of the answers to our solutions would be perhaps fewer personnel in order to get the higher salary, and this has already been suggested. At the present time, we can't see using fewer personnel to provide the coverage we have. We're going to be faced with technological innovation here too, in order to reduce the number of people to raise the salary. It's a continuing problem.
What's your reaction to the public's view of the fireman as a person sitting or laying in bed or sitting at the card table with his feet propped up for a 24-hour shift?
Well, I'd say that's our fault. That's my reaction to it. We've allowed that image to continue. As I mentioned before, I'm involved with the public relations end of it. We attempt to show the department. We're not going to deny that is a part of life. Firemen do play cards, they do have their feet up, but I have to phrase this carefully. It's very expensive to maintain a fire department, and the people who administer the major cities of this country are aware of how much money they spend. And if they felt that they didn't need it, they wouldn't provide the protection that is here. We always encounter the proposition that there are volunteers, and that's true. And volunteers are good firefighters, but the thing is that they are not readily available as we are. to answer your question, though, it's a matter of education with us. If we go out and do an adequate job, this image will change. Perhaps the United Nations will defeat them. It's a hard one to overcome. People have a preconceived notion of a firefighter, and it'll change over a period of time. It's changing now with television shows, emergency, and so on. They're informing the public that we do other things besides take cats out of trees, which we do not in Youngstown, and fight fires.
Do you have any final comments or observations you'd like to make?
No, Mike, I don't think so. Not right now. Perhaps when I see the transcript of this, I'll recall something valid or important that I wanted to say and haven't said so far.
Okay, thank you very much for an interesting interview.